Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Time Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 107 event, which takes place in London, England. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we pushed after going 1-1 on our premium bets. But we also won our one-unit free bet on Alex Oliveira at plus 190 odds. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 107 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired exclusively on UFC Fight Pass this Saturday. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass, obviously, is a women's bantamweight fight between Lena Landsberg, who is 6-1, and Lucy Pudilova, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has public shifted things so far?
I opened Landsberg minus 475, the comeback on Pudilova plus 325. Right now, looking over a sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. It's currently Landsberg minus 310, the comeback on Pudilova at plus 255. So needless to say, early dog action coming in. I mean, let's face it, Landsberg at minus 475 in most cases out there, if you know the sport well or if you do your homework on Landsberg, you're going to think, wow, that's a head-scratcher. She's not that good to be a dominant favorite like that over most. But the truth is, these ladies have gone to battle before. I think it was about a year and a half ago they actually matched up and Landsberg was able to win this fight. So they have previous experience against each other. And the way that fight kind of played out, it's probably going to go similar. So, I mean, I had some good research to go by because they actually did battle. And I just don't expect Pudilova to pull this thing out. I don't think she got that much better in a year and a half, to be honest with you, especially how dominant Landsberg was in their first meeting. Now, again, fights do change. I don't think anything goes the same way twice. I mean, if you just look back at Oliveira and Means this past weekend, there's a very good example of that. I mean, we saw how Means looked in the first fight, and then the second fight here that they rematched, Oliveira was able to do a lot better in that fight. So I understand the scenario in most cases, but the way this fight plays out, honestly, Pudilova definitely has an advantage, I think, on the outside. Her striking is actually, I think, a little bit better than Landsberg, but she lacks power, and she really should be fighting. Well, now this is at bantamweight. Landsberg was fighting up in weight as well, but obviously in the UFC, she's down to 135 pounds here for this as well. So I think that this is a case where Pudilova just lacks in power. So even if she is the better striker and she works better from the outside, Landsberg closes the gap enough. She puts enough pressure on her and makes Pudilova kind of back up against the cage and has a lot of success in the clinch. So Landsberg dominated the clinch work, dominated the cage work, just controlled the tempo of the fight in general. And she basically bullied around and she was just much stronger. I don't know. I mean, Pudilova is going to, I think, make some adjustments to look a little bit better in this fight. But when it comes down to it, literally, Landsberg is going to push her way to another win. I think she's just going to control the cage and control and dictate the tempo of the whole entire fight. So I don't think Pudilova is much of a threat to Landsberg, and I think Landsberg is going to have success. That's why I opened this fight so high, and it's going to stay pretty high, actually, minus 310. I mean, Landsberg should stay a solid favorite, and I think she is going to win this fight.
Yeah, the main thing here is this is a rematch. And while not all rematches are the same, I think this one does have a really good chance of being very similar to their previous fight. A lot of women's fights end up in the clinch where, some fighters just have trouble getting out of that position. And when Lena Landsberg fought Lucy Pudilova the first time, Landsberg basically bullied her, pushed her around, and got her against the fence repeatedly, and then just did some dirty boxing and some clinch work in the fence. Pudilova did have a couple brief flashes where she showcased some nice striking from distance, but she just was not able to get off on anything that seemed damaging because Landsberg repeatedly just closed the distance, got inside, pushed her against the fence, and then went to work. And that was basically rinse and repeat for 15 minutes. And that's how she was able to easily win the fight, just based on octagon control, positioning, and doing a little bit more. So overall, I think what's going to happen here is pretty much a repeat. Pudilova is probably the better technical striker from distance, and she'll land a couple shots as Landsberg's coming in, but unless she lands something ferocious, and I don't think she can because Landsberg took some pretty nasty shots from Chris Cyborg before she finally got finished, and Pudilova just does not have that type of power. So I just think Landsberg will eat whatever Pudilova throws at her and then press her into the fence and win the fight based on positioning, octagon control, and maybe looking for takedowns and doing some work on the inside. So my pick is Lena Landsberg. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Bradley Scott, who is 11-4, taking on Scott Ascombe, who is 14-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Ascombe minus 135, the comeback on Scott minus 105. So virtually a pick'em with a slight lean towards Ascombe. Right now it's actually minus 150 at five dimes, and the comeback on Scott is plus 130. So a little bit more action coming Ascombe's way. I don't know, man. I don't know if I agree with it. I mean, this is a tough fight because I think there's a lot of similarities between the two. I think overall Ascombe has more tools. I think he's the better offensive striker on the feet at times. I think he could do a little bit more damage, cleaner damage on the feet as well. I think he's honestly just a little bit of the better athlete from the two. But the problem is with Ascombe, as the fight progresses, he does tend to slow down. Again, you could say a lot of the same things about Brad Scott as well. But I think he will let people dictate and control the tempo of the fight. And I think the Scott has it in him to do sort of that same thing as well. It's going to really come down to who gets, again, control of the cage, the tempo, pushing each other up, who gets cage position, who gets top position if it hits the floor, and who's just putting together the most work really at a steady pace. So both these guys, again, tend to wear down, tend to slow down. They both make mistakes by being put on their back in fights as well when they really can't afford to do so in a tight fought battle. So I don't know. I mean, I think Scott's honestly a tough guy. He's the type of guy that just will be there. He's kind of not a quitter, not that saying that Ascombe isn't, but it's just unfortunately because both these guys, again, at times just lack, I think, fight IQ, and they've blown fights that they can easily win. So that being said, the way these guys match up, I do lean a little bit more towards Scott in this matchup. I think that he will control more of the pace of this fight. I think he will control more of the cage action along the way as well. And again, even if Ascombe starts off a little bit better early on, I think Scott will adapt enough that he'll make it a war, a kind of a close back and forth battle in all aspects of the game. But I think he just kind of barely edges it out. And that's the way I'm going to go with. So I don't really agree with the early action on Ascombe coming in. In fact, I would side the other way and lean a little bit more towards Scott. But this should be a toss up, a coin flip type of fight. It's going to be very competitive if it hits the scorecards. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a split decision. But the lean is definitely Scott.
This fight is basically a battle between two guys that have been relative disappointments in their UFC careers. I mean, neither guy has really picked up a quality win inside the octagon so far. Scott has had a little bit more longevity, but for the most part, that's mainly because he's been injured a lot and he's been fighting intermittently, while Ascombe has been a bit more active, but has yet to really go out there and really shine. I mean, Ascombe does have a couple wins, but I mean, you look at who he beat and, Antonio dos Santos and Chris Dempsey. I mean, that is not exactly, the list of who's who in the middleweight division. And the same thing goes with Bradley Scott. I mean, he's really struggled to go out there and do something impressive. I mean, it all started with the first loss to Robert Whittaker, and neither guy has really been able to be consistent, and I don't think either guy has even picked up consecutive wins. Both guys are 2-3 so far in their octagon careers. Now, Ascombe does have a little bit of length, but Scott actually, surprisingly, even though Ascombe's a little lankier, Scott actually does have the reach advantage on him. So I think Scott can put the pressure on Ascombe. Ascombe will be dangerous with knees if Scott is kind of charging forward, but I expect that Bradley Scott is going to kind of pressure Ascombe, make him back up, and Ascombe really is not a great fighter when he's forced to be a little bit more defensive. You saw that really well in his last fight against Jack Hermanson, where he just kind of got outworked over the course of three rounds, and his defensive flaws on the feet were really showcased. And I think that that's what's going to happen here. Scott should be able to connect on the feet, and then Bradley Scott also probably could look for takedowns. Askham's ground game is definitely a work in progress, and I expect that he can be controlled there as well. So I just think Askham's defensive flaws are going to, both standing and on the ground, are going to be exposed here. And even though Bradley Scott isn't a world beater, I think he might have just enough to walk away with maybe even a split decision. So my pick is going to be Bradley Scott. Now dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Ian Entwistle, who is 9-3, taking on Brett Johns, who is 13-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Johns minus 400, the comeback on Entwistle at plus 280. Looks to be about right. Right now, Johns is minus 440. The comeback on Entwistle is plus 350. Looking at market price, there's about 4-1s out there for the most part. So hovering between 400 to 450 out there on Johns. And again, I think it looks about right, to be honest with you. Entwistle, I'll keep this short and sweet, really. We all know what this is about with Entwistle. I mean, he's definitely a devastating submission artist. He goes in for your leg locks, and he's very successful. I mean, he dives in for that leg any way he can to get the fight to the ground. And once he has your leg in deep, I mean, you're in some serious trouble. So you got to approach this fight with caution. You want to avoid the ground. And I mean, stylistically, this is a kind of a weird matchup because Johns, obviously, in most cases, he has a well-rounded game overall, but he loves to take the fight to the ground and usually grind people out and control the tempo of the fight. And this aspect, though, I don't think he's going to want to really tangle too much on the ground with Entwistle. Even if he does, though, I think Johns' sub-defense is good enough and he's smart enough that he doesn't get caught up in that trap. But I mean, at times with a leg lock specialist like Entwistle really is, you don't want to really take that risk. So I think Johns basically fights smart. He's a very intelligent fighter. I think he's going to come up with a good game plan. He's going to avoid the initial submission attempts from Entwistle and then just pound him and beat him, I think. I mean, Entwistle's never been out of the first round, and I think that's going to probably play out here as well. Once he cannot get that submission win, I think he's going to get beat up by Johns, and Johns going to finish him. So the pick is Johns to win.
Yeah, the main thing here, and this is very cut and dry, Ian Entwistle is the type of fighter that is all or nothing. And so far in the UFC, it's been a lot of nothing. He was able to get that crazy win over Anthony Burchak with a knee bar, but for the most part, if he does not get a leg lock, he loses. And it doesn't just lose, he gets destroyed. You saw it. I mean, a really good example of it was that last fight against Alejandro Perez, where Entwistle just repeatedly went for leg lock after leg lock after leg lock. It didn't work. And then he just got absolutely blasted, ate 48 strikes before finally getting submitted or finally getting finished. And that was all in the first round. Almost just about every fight of his career is a first round fight. I mean, this guy just goes for it as hard as he can, and then he either gets the finish or he loses. That's pretty much all you need to know about Ian Entwistle. And Brett Johns, on the other hand, he is a very well-rounded fighter. I mean, UFC debut, this guy got 11 takedowns against Kwang Ho Kwak, and then was also holding his own on the feet. So, I mean, this guy can do it all. I think Brett Johns, if he wants to, he can go for takedowns against Entwistle, but he's playing with fire because of those leg locks. All he really has to do is not get submitted in the first round, and this fight is going to be an easy win for him. John should be able to dominate this fight on the feet if he can just avoid Entwistle diving at his legs. And then if his submission defense is good enough and he believes in it enough, then hell, just let Entwistle dive at your legs. And then while both of Entwistle's arms are going for your leg, just start punching him in the face. That's worked for just about everybody that's beat him so far, and it should work here. So I'm going to side with Brett Johns as well. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Leon Edwards, who is 12-3, taking on Vicente Luque, who is 11-5-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Luque minus 175, the comeback on Edwards at plus 135. Right now at five dimes, it is Luque minus 155. The comeback is still the same at plus 135. So line margins have tightened up. There is two-way action coming in this fight. What a great fight. I'm kind of disappointed they matched these guys up, as silly as that sounds, because they're two definitely of my favorite rising prospects in the welterweight division, honestly, and they've been for a while. I mean, now obviously they've both gained enough respect and enough recognition from the MMA diehards out there that pretty much everybody knows that they're dealing with quality when you see Edwards step into the cage or Luque. So both these guys are awesome, and that's why I'm a little surprised that they kind of squared them up at this point of their careers as well. You figure they'd kind of be on separate paths and just kind of get fed guys that would be a nice notch on the resume. Well, I mean, if whoever gets a win here is definitely going to have a nice notch on that resume, because they're both, again, quality fighters. And it's tough. I mean, I've honestly been going back and forth on this fight because they're both so skilled. I mean, on the feet, you can make a case for either fighter. Edwards is a fantastic striker, tons of knockout power. He's an accurate striker. I mean, the guy is something special to watch on the feet. Now, he can get outstruck, of course. I mean, we've seen that in the past as well. So it's not like he's going to go out there and win every striking battle, but he's going to win most. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And he has that special knockout power that he can end things with one kick, one punch. I mean, that's how dominant he can be on the feet. But he's actually gained a lot of knowledge since his UFC debut, and a lot of experience in the wrestling world. And he's been working on that, drilling that extensively. As we can see in his last couple fights, it's definitely paid off for him. I mean, that's how he was able to beat Tumanov in his last fight, which was an impressive win for him, to say the least. So Edwards has been working and drilling that wrestling enough that his takedown defense is actually decent, and his offensive wrestling's up to par where he can get most people down, which is pretty impressive. So he is a quality fighter and a tough out for most, including a guy like Luque. Luque, you could say a lot of the same things. On the feet, man, the guy's ultra dangerous. He's getting more confidence. I mean, I think he's going to have a little bit of speed advantage over Edwards, and he is a dangerous striker. I mean, he's very accurate in his own right as well, and he has knockout power to go along with it. On the ground, Luque is more dangerous in the submission games. I mean, he definitely is one of those fighters that you cannot underestimate. He gets around your neck, it could be a wrap that fast. So he's got slick arm bars to go along with it. Just a slick submission game. I mean, offensively, the guy is definitely talented. And his wrestling offensively is nothing to be overlooked as well. I mean, he could definitely get the fight to the ground when he wants to in most cases, and he could do some damage there. But if any kryptonite at all across the board here, it would be Luque's takedown defense a little bit. I think he has been put on his back in the past. Obviously, his fight against Graves, that's what got him beat, basically. Graves was able to control the tempo of that fight. Now, Graves is an excellent grinder. He's the type of fighter that's going to do that to most opponents. Of course, we know that. So I don't think it was even a horrible loss for Luque, but it did show a path to victory for Edwards that he could possibly utilize, especially with his wrestling improving to the point where he can get fighters down to the ground that might have good takedown defense. So I think that's what it comes down to. Can Edwards have success getting Luque on his back and kind of controlling this fight? Because on the feet, I think they're going to go back and forth. They're both going to be ultra dangerous for sure. Either one of them can actually win this fight any moment as the fight progresses. But I think we're going to see a war. I think we're going to see a hard fought battle. I think we're going to see two guys that have no quit in them. And it's going to probably go pretty deep, if not hit the scorecards. And if so, I think Edwards is going to kind of grind him out and just win a very close competitive battle because of the takedowns, because of the wrestling aspect of the fight. That's what I'm expecting. But this should be an awesome fight. Both these guys are phenomenal, and I'm looking forward to watching this play out. But my pick is going to be Edwards to win.
Man, this is a great matchup. And it's kind of sad to see two really promising up-and-coming fighters on the welterweight division getting matched up together. One of these guys is going to get a bit of a setback, while another one obviously is going to be jumping up, I think, into a top 15 ranking. Now, Luque has been on an absolute roll. I mean, this guy has been going out there and not just winning, but in his last four fights, he has dominated and got a finish. So Luque has really been not just winning with strikes either. I mean, he's been winning with submissions, and then his last couple fights just destroying his opponents on the feet. Most impressively, the recent fight over Bilal Muhammad. Now, Leon Edwards, he's had to more adapt his style because he came into the UFC as almost a pure striker with a slight grappling background, and he lost his UFC debut because his opponent was a better grappler. And then a couple fights later, he lost to Kamaru Usman, who was one of the best wrestlers in the whole UFC. And he adapted, he learned, and he really focused on the grappling and wrestling in his game. And now I think that he's one of the – wrestling is probably one of his better attributes as a fighter, even though, I mean, this guy has a victory in about 8 seconds on his track record in the UFC. But now You saw in his last fight against Albert Tumenov, Leon Edwards was able to go out there and repeatedly get takedowns and then eventually submit Tumenov, a guy with a very dangerous striking acumen. So when these guys are getting matched up here, yeah, Luque, I think, has a little bit more power. Luque has a slightly bigger reach. Luque might be a little bit more dangerous with a finish. And Luque probably has a slightly better submission game. But Edwards has the wrestling. And Edwards will be fighting basically in his backyard. He does hail from England. And Luque, I mean, you got to factor in a couple other things. Yeah, he's been on a great roll, but his gym has been in a bit of chaos with the Black Zillions kind of disbanding and splitting. And Edwards, I really think that he could take advantage of one of the few flaws in Luque's game. As you saw in Luque's UFC debut against Michael Graves, he got out-grappled. He got repeatedly taken down and dominated by somebody that was just a tenacious wrestler. And yeah, Leon Edwards is not just a wrestler, but I do think that the wrestling has come along so much in his game that that is definitely his path to victory here. So I'm leaning Leon Edwards. Even though Luque is more likely to get a finish, I think Edwards' wrestling is going to be the biggest factor in this fight, and Edwards will use that wrestling to get top position and win the fight. So my pick is Leon Edwards. Now for this next fight, there are a couple contradicting reports on what weight it will be taking place, but as far as I know, it will be at welterweight, and we have Tom Breese, who is 10-1, taking on Alawel Bengbose, who is 6-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Breeze -210, the comeback on Bambosi at +160. It has been bet up a little bit. Right now it's Breeze -275, the comeback on Bambosi at +235. So more action coming in Breeze's way, but there is two action coming in this fight as well, because they have reportedly gotten some action on Bambosi as well. So I think they'll be continuing to get a little bit more two-way action on this fight. But the truth is, Breeze from the rip has been honestly the more hyped fighter, the more popular fighter of the two, the higher expectations of the two as well. I mean, he trains with TriStar. We all know, you know, coming into his UFC debut, there was hype around him. A lot of people thought that he was the next big prospect at 170 pounds to actually, you know, make a deep run, because he was still raw as far as his ability. But he had very talented grappler. He had all the tools to become something special. On the feet, obviously, he's proven to be decent there as well. So he does have a very well-rounded game. But he's just not as dominant, or he's not quite lived up to the hype level yet. He might get to against Bambosi here in this fight, because stylistically, it's a matchup that obviously he's going to have to fight. On the feet, Bambosi is ultra dangerous. He's got a ton of power. He should be dropping to 170 pounds, like we said. So this is definitely a feared man to be dealing with right now at 170 pounds with all the power and the knockout ability that Bambosi has. So Breeze cannot take this fight lightly at all, but that's why I think he's going to probably win this fight. Bambosi, obviously, he's been put on his back. I mean, that seems to be a flaw of his. His sub defense was actually pretty impressive. It's been okay. So for a striking based fighter, at least he does have a ground game, and he has the ability to survive on the ground. Now, I do think Breeze is going to test that. He's going to push it to max, because Breeze's ground game is pretty slick, and I think he's going to probably have his way with Bambosi on the ground a little bit, not even just control, but I think he can find or look for, you know, submission win on the ground as well. So I think that's probably how it plays out. I mean, Breeze will be competitive somewhat, I think, on the feet overall with Bambosi, but you don't want to play in your competitor's element. That's exactly what he'll be doing here. So I think he gets the fight to the floor and he wins this fight on the ground. So I do agree with a little bit more of the action coming in Breeze's way. I think he is the more talented fighter. Bambosi's going to be dangerous, but I think Breeze finds a way to win this fight, whether it's on the cards or he wins this fight inside along the way. So Breeze is the pick.
Yeah, I mean, this fight's pretty straightforward. Bengbose is a guy that is going to come out extremely aggressive. He's going to try to knock Tom Breeze's head off however means possible, whether it's a flying knee, a spinning attack, a haymaker thrown from the hip, you name it. I mean, this guy is capable of extremely impressive, devastating finishing ability. But to counter that, when he doesn't get the finish quickly, he runs out of steam fast, and he kind of loses that knockout power. Everything becomes way more telegraphed. And then he does not have a very good ground game whatsoever. So basically, if Tom Breeze can just avoid getting knocked out in the first couple minutes, then he should be able to easily get the finish here. I mean, the main thing here I expect from Brees is some jabs at distance. And then if he can close the distance and get this fight to the floor, it should be a relative cakewalk. I mean, this guy has a very good ground game. He has some nasty submission ability. He's very long and lanky, and he can kind of do some unique submissions both off of his back and just about everywhere else. So Tom Brees is a really good prospect. He just kind of has an issue with aggression and maybe other fighters that are pushing the pace on him a little bit. That's what happened in that close loss to Sean Strickland. But overall, Olawale Bangbose is a completely different type of fighter, and this should be an easy matchup for Brees. As long as he doesn't get completely blown out in the first couple minutes or leave his chin exposed, then he should be able to win in a relative cakewalk, honestly. So my pick is going to be Tom Brees. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Mark Diakasi, who is 11-0, taking on Teemu Pakelin, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened at Casey -245, the comeback, and Pakelin at +175. Checking the Donbass screen right now over at Five Dimes, it is Diakasi -230. The comeback on Pakelin is +190. So two-way action coming in on this fight. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. I have noticed this line bounce up and down a little bit. Diakasi was a little bit heavier of a favorite. Now it's starting to come back down. So the two-way action, I think, is justified because this is an interesting stylistic matchup for sure. I mean, Pakelin's going to want to get this fight to the floor and kind of exploit that Casey's ground weakness, if there is such a thing. I mean, he did look to have a lack in that area, especially on the ground in the second round against Perez. But then he bounced back strong, showed a lot of heart, and was able to pull off the victory by winning the third round in his last fight as well. There's a lot of question marks to me with Diakasi here, to be honest with you. And I thought Perez was going to answer a lot of those for us, and he kind of did. But I think even though Diakasi struggled and had a tough, hard-fought battle in that fight, I actually gained a little bit of respect for him because I needed to see him get tested and to see how he was going to react when the cards were kind of stacked against him a little bit. I mean, it was a fight that he could have easily lost, but he dug deep and he was the better fighter in that third round, and it kind of got him through to that point. And I think Perez, again, tested him pretty well because it was that Casey needed to be up against stiff competition to see how he's going to actually do, because there was so much hype in him coming into the UFC as well, and I didn't think it was quite justified. But he's starting to win me over a little bit. I mean, the guy definitely has some skill everywhere the fight takes place. We all know he's an extremely dangerous striker on the feet, but his wrestling game and his ground game is definitely up to par. I mean, it's decent. He can get on top. He can, even if you put him on his back, a lot of times he will get back up to his feet or, you know, reverse you on the ground as well. So Diakasi is a pretty complete fighter, and he's going to continue to get better. At age 23, I mean, sky's the limit for him for sure. Pakelin, on the other hand, you can say a lot of the same things about him, though, too. I think, I mean, at age 29, so he's a little bit older, but he's still young enough that you know he's going to keep on improving. And especially now that he's had a couple fights in the UFC, I think he's just going to get more confidence moving forward. And what he thrives at is honestly on the ground. I mean, that's where he wins the majority of the fights. If he can get Diakasi on the ground, I think he does have a significant advantage, and I think he could pose enough of a threat to maybe finish Diakasi on the ground by submission. So that's what Pakelin's going to want to do here. On the feet, obviously he can be okay. He's not bad. He's got some reach over most people. I think he's going to have a couple inches in height over Diakasi here, and possibly, it depends. There's conflicting reports out there on the pure reach, but he might have a couple inches of pure reach on the feet as well. But he doesn't want to stand and bang with Diakasi. He wants to try to exploit again his ground weakness and get the fight to the ground and probably look for submission against him. So styles make fights. This should be an interesting one, and I think it's another tough test for Diakasi, but I do lean his way a little bit. I think what it's going to come down to, another hard-fought battle for him, another tough win, but I think it's only going to make him better and improve. So if he doesn't get submitted by Pakelin on the ground, I think he is going to win this fight. So I slightly lean towards Diakasi. Honestly, at the current odds, though, I wouldn't lay it. It's a dog or pass situation. So you either take Pakelin or you just pass. You don't lay the juice on this fight. So that's my take, but I'm going to pick Diakasi to win.
Another really tricky matchup. Teemu Pakelin, I think, is the slightly more technical ground fighter, but Mark Diakasi is extremely athletic, very capable of getting quick knockouts. He has a lot of power. We've seen him just storm through people. We've also seen him have to fall back a little bit on his wrestling and have to win that way. I mean, you saw it in his last fight where he kind of had a bit of a gut check moment where He won the first round relatively easily, then got dominated in round two, and, you know, he just sucked it up and went out there and took his opponent down repeatedly in round three and was able to get a victory. Now, Teemu Pekkelen, I don't think will be giving up takedowns easily, but Mark Dykesi is capable of these just intense bursts of violence. And if he can get inside and connect with a big haymaker or a knee or an elbow, if he can back Pekkelen up against the fence and then just start throwing combinations, he could do some serious damage here. Pekkelen, on the other hand, though, if he can get Dykesi on his back, Pekkelen will be a huge threat, both with submissions, with ground and pound. Pekkelen also does have some power, so if Dykesi is being too reckless out there, Pekkelen could crack him on the feet, and that could set something up. That's what happened in Pekkelen's last fight. It lasted all of, like, 30 seconds, where his opponent was too aggressive, Pekkelen cracked him, jumped on him on the ground, and got a submission. So Dykesi could be playing with some fire here if he's sloppy, but I don't think Dykesi will be too sloppy. I think that he'll be cautiously aggressive, and he'll find his moments. And Dykesi is a really talented fighter that has a lot of potential, and he's still filling up that potential. He definitely has a long way to go. He's still pretty raw, but I mean, this guy definitely is capable of really good things in the lightweight division, and I think he has a very bright future. So I'm siding with Dykesi as well. Now moving on to the heavyweight division, we have Daniel Omelinchuk, who is 19-6-1 with one no contest, taking on Timothy Johnson, who is 10-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Johnson -150, Omelinchuk at +110. Right now looking for five dimes. Johnson -170. The comeback on Omelinchuk is at +150. So a little bit more support coming in Johnson's way. And I do see it. I think it is justified. I mean, both these guys are heavyweights, I think, that are kind of in the middle of the pack, and they can definitely win some fights or make it at least interesting in most cases as well. And I mean, recently, especially with Tim Johnson, you could see he's just one of those guys that's never going to get, I think, enough credit because of just the way he looks a little bit, the way he fights. I mean, it's weird. And I'm sure most of you guys understand that, have watched him compete a few times too, but he's a tough guy, man. He's a tough out. He has a lot of good qualities about him. Obviously he's got that wrestling background and he just excels in the clinch. He's just a dirty, grinding type of tough out that you're going to have a lot of struggles against matching up against him because just the way he fights. But again, I mean, looking at his last couple of performances, I mean, that Tabura win especially stands out pretty good because look how good Tabura has been in his last couple outings. So that's a pretty good notch on his resume. And that's the kind of fighter Johnson is. I mean, he can win fights like that. Now, of course, even in his last fight against Volkov, I mean, that was a close fight. That could have definitely went either way. So, and Volkov, as we all know, former Bellator champion, he's not an easy out either. So Johnson's right there. He can put together some quality wins, some quality performances. He's just, like I said, a gritty, grinding type of fighter that's going to make life tough on you. He can get some takedowns and usually out-wrestle you a little bit, and his clinch game is definitely strong. So Omelinchuk is going to have to try to keep this thing on the outside a little bit, but he does like to work in the clinch as well. So this is where it gets interesting. But Omelinchuk is at distance a little bit of the better striker, even though he's at a reach discrepancy here by a few inches. But still, I think he could be the more accurate striker. I think he could be the more effective striker overall, and I think he's more of the knockout threat, even though Johnson does have some power in his own right and actually has more wins by knockout, if that makes any sense. I just think Omelinchuk is the better technical striker. It just, I don't know if it's going to play out that way. I think Johnson basically slows this fight down a little bit. He gets Omelinchuk up against the cage. He looks for some takedowns along the way and just kind of fights the way he wants to fight. So Omelinchuk is probably going to get drug into that. And if that's the case, Johnson should win on the scorecards. I do expect this. I mean, for heavyweight fight, a lot of times you don't expect him to go through the cards, but this one I think has a definite shot at going there. Both you guys are tough to finish. They're both going to be determined to pull off the victory here. So you're going to get an honest fight out of both guys. And I think more than likely it probably hits the scorecards with Johnson winning it. Now, heavyweights, I mean, we could see a finish along the way, obviously, but I do think that it's going to be an ultra close decision and Johnson gets the slight edge, in my opinion.
Yeah, this fight, Daniel Omelinchuk, if you go back and watch him fight, he has some major flaws with his fight IQ. If you go back and watch his fight against Alexei Oleinik has, I mean, the guy just went out there against a guy that was much better than him on the ground. And even though he had the stand-up advantage, he would throw a couple strikes and then he would close the distance and clinch or even look for takedowns. Now, that really bit him in the butt early, but then Oleinik gassed and Omelianchuk just repeatedly kept doing the same thing. And it ended up actually working because Oleinik gassed, but man, that was such a dumb fight IQ thing. I was screaming at the television because I had a bet on Omelianchuk, and I'll never forget how frustrating it was to watch him fight against somebody that he had a huge advantage against in one area and not take advantage of it. So against Timothy Johnson, how can you possibly trust Omelianchuk to want to keep this fight standing and stay away from Johnson when just most of the time Omelianchuk just throws a couple strikes and he does have some pop in his left hand and he has some good kicks, but he throws a couple strikes and then he almost always closes the distance. And when he does that, Timothy Johnson is going to drag him to the floor. Johnson is a big boy. I mean, this guy has the reach on Omelianchuk. He has 3 inches in height. He comes in at the heavyweight limit and he probably has to cut some weight to get there. So I expect that every time Omelianchuk throws a couple strikes and then goes for the clinch, Johnson's just going to turn that and chuck him to the floor. Johnson is a guy that does not have a bad gas tank. I expect that when Omelianchuk repeatedly closes the distance, Johnson will have no problem just reversing that position and getting him on his back and keeping him there. Johnson is a good wrestler, not a great one, but he definitely can keep going for 3 rounds. He will not gas out, and he should be able to hold his own on the feet enough to keep Omelianchuk honest there as well. So I just think Timothy Johnson rolls in this fight. I expect him to not just win, but dominate probably and win at the worst a one-sided decision. So my pick is going to be Timothy Johnson. Now, dropping down to the light heavyweight division, we have Darren Stewart, who is 8-0, taking on Francimar Barroso, who is 18-6. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Stewart, minus 180. The comeback on Barroso at plus 140. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, it is currently Stewart minus 185. Barroso is at plus 160. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Nothing too crazy to report as far as action goes. This is another interesting fight. Of course, we know the first fight ended with an accidental headbutt that ended the fight early in the first round. And Stewart was actually controlling the tempo of that fight. He was definitely controlling the action overall. I mean, pushing the tempo of the fight, and looked like he was on his way to win early on. But I mean, we didn't see it play out enough, so it's hard to even say that. But based on the early start, Stewart was looking pretty good. And again, it was in Barroso's backyard at that time as well. And Barroso actually closed as a favorite in that fight. He was about $1.50, I believe, as the fave. So this time around, it's Stewart that's going to obviously close the favorite more than likely, unless something drastic happens here. But and I think it's deserving. I mean, I think Stewart, the way they match up together, I mean, Barroso is definitely a well-rounded fighter, and he's faced some stiff competition so far in the UFC, and he's done okay overall. I mean, he's not going to be a type of fighter, again, that kind of blows you out with his abilities, but he's not an easy out either. I mean, Barroso definitely has some power on the feet. He can be effective there at times. His wrestling's a little bit underrated at times as well. It's just the point, he's 36 years old now. I think he is starting to slow down. I think that his better days are honestly behind him a little bit. And Stewart is younger. I believe he's 25 years old. He's going to get better fight by fight. And now he made his UFC debut, even if it was short lived. At least he's got that kind of – a lot of those jitters are probably going to be out of the way. I mean, not that you don't get nervous every time out, but you know what I mean. I mean, the initial debut jitters, Stewart's going to be a little bit more comfortable. And now he's got to have a little bit of confidence the way the first fight played out as well. So, I mean, speaking as far as interviews and everything that we've seen leading up to this fight, it sounds that way. And I do think Stewart probably puts it together enough that he probably does finish Barroso. I mean, Stewart is a Taekwondo black belt, so he's a striking-based fighter, but he has some wrestling as well and some decent takedown defense, and he does go for takedowns and utilize the wrestling aspect as well. So he's a pretty well-rounded fighter that's still a little raw, but I think he's going to continue to get better. And I think the way he matches up with Barroso here in his backyard this time, I think his confidence level is going to be at an all-time high, and he's going to make a successful – I don't want to say the debut because it's his second fight, but a successful – I guess, realistic type of debut, because since the first one is questionable, to say the least, with that headbutt. But that being said, I think he's going to win this fight. I think Stewart is a very talented fighter, and I think we'll see him progress as his career goes on and prove that. So Stewart's going to come away with a win, in my opinion.
Yeah, and like Nick said, this is a rematch, but the last fight kind of didn't happen because Stewart hit him with the headbutt, and then they ruled that that was the reason that Barroso got hurt, and then that's why the fight ended up getting stopped. So that fight kind of got canceled out, and they're doing it again quickly. Barroso, relatively quick turnaround after getting knocked out, and Stewart, I think, is probably going to do the same thing here. I mean, last time it was in Brazil, and this time around, it's actually in Stewart's backyard, and Barroso's having to come all the way to England, and Stewart is just a little bit more athletic. The guy has a little bit more power. He has a better chin. Barroso is a little bit more well-rounded. Like, if this fight goes to the ground, Barroso would probably have a slight advantage. And Barroso does have some decent kicks, but if Stewart just gets inside on him, I think he wins. Barroso's chin is a bit questionable at this point, and Stewart packs some serious power. So what I expect happens here is Stewart just finds an opening, and all it's going to take is one decent shot, and Barroso will get hurt again. It won't be a headbutt, but it'll probably just be a powerful fist, and that's all it'll take, because I do think Barroso will wilt a little bit once he gets hurt. I also think Barroso's conditioning is a little suspect at this point as well. So I just think this is a good matchup for Stewart. I think he's going in the positive direction compared to Barroso, and I think Darren Stewart gets the victory here. So my pick is going to be Darren Stewart. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have Irish Joe Duffy, who is 15-2, taking on Reza Madadi, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Duffy -575, the comeback on Madadi at +375. I thought it was enough, but it really wasn't. Right now it's Duffy -750, Madadi is +525. I get it. I mean, Duffy's been – I mean, a really good fighter for a long time, even before he made his UFC debut, actually. I think he – unfortunately for him, I think it was a big letdown for him on The Ultimate Fighter, because I was expecting him to do really well. But unfortunately for him, he lost there. But the UFC finally brought him in and, you know, put him on the roster, and he's been doing some great things. I mean, the guy is a tough out. Everywhere the fight takes place, Duffy, especially his boxing, as we all know, and his stand-up game, that's where it's at. So that's where he's going to want to keep this fight against Madadi. He's going to want to keep it upright, and he's going to want to try to knock Madadi out. Madadi's a tough guy. He's a tough out. He's been in there with some great fighters throughout his career. He's not an easy guy to stop. I don't think he's ever been officially stopped, to be honest with you. So, but I do think that Duffy can be the first. Now, Duffy overall, I mean, he's good everywhere the fight takes place, even his jiu-jitsu, offensively especially. He's pretty good there. So I think that he does have an edge in most cases, almost in all areas of the game. But Madadi, I mean, what his strengths are is honestly the wrestling and the ground game. I mean, that's where he does his best work too, is on the ground. So I think Madadi, if he takes Duffy's back, Duffy can be in some serious trouble. Or if he's able to just constantly implement his takedown attack and get Duffy up against the cage and pin him down a little bit, kind of follow the same game plan or whatnot that Poirier did, but in a different way. Obviously, Poirier is a more successful fighter and a better fighter than Madadi. So that, I don't know if he can exactly do that, but that's what he's going to have to do to win this fight. I don't think he's going to do that. I think time comes for everything, and I think this is going to be the time where Duffy probably finishes Madadi. But if I'm telling you, for those of you guys that are laying the juice and thinking it's a lock of a parlay at -500, 600, 700, whatever for Duffy, it's really not. And I think it's one of those cases where the line being this high, you got to stay away from it, because Madadi does have a path to victory, even though I don't see it really coming into play. But I think he can sub Duffy. So be careful out there if you guys are just, like I said, automatically think Duffy's a lock. I do think he wins, and I do think he's going to keep on adding to the hype with his, especially with his highlight reel type of performances. And this could be another one. So my pick is Duffy to win.
And I'm cautiously optimistic about Joe Duffy as well. I mean, this guy is just loaded with talent. He has tremendous boxing. He has an underrated ground game. The main thing here is, as long as Joe Duffy does not underestimate Reza Madadi, he should be in good shape. Madadi is a guy that is a bit tenacious, aggressive. He is strong with his grappling, and he'll just go after you. You saw that in his return fight against Jan Cabral. I mean, that was a tremendous performance, and he just dug deep and got a finish against Cabral with that third round TKO in a fight that was very close. So, I mean, this guy definitely does not have much quit in him. And you have to respect that. I mean, he definitely goes for it when he's fighting. Joe Duffy, on the other hand, though, I mean, he is just so much more talented and well-rounded. And, I mean, he's a guy with excellent power. I mean, he can finish you with his hands. I think he can finish you with his feet. He can probably finish you with a submission, although that'll be a little more difficult against Madani because he is a bit more of a ground-focused fighter. But the other thing that really is going to be a huge factor here is the fact that Madani's 38 years old. When he fought Michael Johnson, even though he ended up getting the win, I mean, he was so close to getting completely put out cold. And Joe Duffy, I do think, is the guy that probably should be able to finish Madani. So, Madani's going to have, a decent performance, but it's just not going to be enough. Joe Duffy is going to connect on him with his heavy hands. Madani is probably not going to be able to close the distance and put him on his back repeatedly like he'll need to. And honestly, the only way Madani wins is if he can use that wrestling and repeatedly dump Duffy on his back. And I just don't see it happening. Duffy knows that, and Duffy's preparing for that. And when a fighter basically only has the one path to victory, it makes it a lot more difficult. If Madani was a really talented striker, he could set up the takedowns, but Duffy should be able to keep enough distance away that the sprawl should come pretty easy. So I expect Joe Duffy to win and win impressively. Now moving on to the main card, we have a featherweight contest between Arnold Allen, who is 11-1, and Makwan Amirkani, who is 13-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Amirkani -130, the comeback on Allen -110. So virtually a pick 'em with a very slight lean towards Amirkani. Right now it's Amirkani -120. The comeback on Allen is even money. So line margins have tightened up. A little bit more action was coming in on Amirkani. Now we're starting to see some action back on Allen as it's come back down a little bit. And we're going to continue to see two-way action on this fight because these are two quality, again, if you want to say prospects or whatnot, that the UFC has in the featherweight division, no doubt about it. Amirkani, to me, I've never been that impressed, to be honest with you, but he's another one of these guys that's actually performed relatively well in the UFC thus far. So you watch his footage and film on him before his UFC debut. It's just not that impressive. I mean, there's so many good fighters in the UFC at 145 pounds that you just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, this guy is nothing special, right? But since coming into the UFC, he's actually put together some really quality performances and wins. I mean, his win over Ogle, I thought it was a fluke, to be honest with you, because of the way he just, you know, I mean, he landed that knee or whatnot, and it was just so quick that we didn't really get to see the fight play out. But then he followed up with an impressive quick win over Fulham, which isn't a great notch on his resume. But then he did get a little bit more respect my way over Wilkinson, his win over Wilkinson. I mean, he had to tough it out against a guy that has decent skill, decent wrestling, is somewhat of a threat. Definitely his best win to date in the UFC. And he had to put up with a little bit of adversity, especially in that third round against Wilkinson, and he did it. So Amirkani's stock has, you know, rose in my opinion as well, even though the public out there has had this guy on a pedestal for a while. I just didn't see it, but I do understand it. And Amirkani's wrestling is where it's all at. I mean, he does have the type of wrestling style that he can usually implement pretty successful. Get most fighters down on their back and control of the ground. And that's exactly where he dominates most fights, or where he does his best work at. And he's going to try to do that here against Allen as well. And it's going to come down to him having success or not if he's going to win this fight. I think he will early on have some success. I think he probably can get Allen down a time or two, especially early on in the first round. But I'm not sure as the fight goes how much success he's going to have, because Amirkani, outside of that, he does have some power and finishing ability, obviously, on the feet. But he has some holes in his game, technically speaking. And I think Allen is the more technical of the two as far as pure MMA skill set goes. He's been training at TriStar. And with that training at TriStar, he's actually developed a pretty decent wrestling game in his own right. I think his takedown defense has improved, which he needed to do. But overall, Allen is he's just a little bit better. I mean, all areas of the game. Allen does have a submission game. Allen is the better striker, more technical striking on the feet. Allen does have a wrestling game, even though Amirkani's wrestling should be better. It really should be. I mean, Allen still has a wrestling game to go along with it. And again, he's, like I said, even off his back, he's all right. So this is going to be an interesting fight. I think Mirakani probably edges out the first round, but then if it gets into round two and round three, if he doesn't stop Allen in the first round, I think he loses those rounds and Allen could possibly turn things around and finish Mirakani possibly as the fight progresses. So to me, I like the improvements that I've seen in Allen's game, and I know this is going to be a huge test for him to keep it upright, but I think it's a test he can pass. Again, even if he does get taken down at first, I think he adapts, he adjusts, and it's going to get harder for Mirakani to take him down as the fight progresses a little bit, and I think that's where Allen's going to do some of his best work. So I do think Allen has the ability to win this fight, and I think he's going to be the one that kind of takes bigger strides improving, even moving forward in his career. So I like Allen here. I think he's going to pick up the slight upset win.
Just like in the Leon Edwards versus Vicente Luque fight, this is another battle of really talented UFC prospects getting against each other. Usually UFC pits prospects against veterans as a great test instead of guaranteeing that a prospect is going to be derailed a little bit. But I guess this fight can make sense. Arnold Allen, Makwan Amirkhani, both very promising guys that have had pretty solid starts to their MMA careers, especially in the UFC. But as Nick mentioned, yes, Arnold Allen is the more technical striker, and he is the more technical overall fighter. He's more dangerous with submissions as well. But Makwan Amirkhani is a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, and he's definitely the better wrestler. I know Allen's been working on his wrestling, but you can work on something and it's still not going to catch up to a guy that's had it his whole life. And Makwan Amirkhani has been an excellent wrestler his entire life. And he's showcased it in the UFC. I mean, this guy has just been steamrolling people. Now, obviously, Amirkhani's conditioning is a little bit suspect, so that is one thing that I'm a little bit worried about. But for the most part, I just expect Amirkhani to be pressing forward, looking for takedowns, and looking to do damage from top position. Now, Allen will threaten from bottom. Allen will be the better striker in open space, but I don't expect this fight to stay in open space for extended periods of time. So what I think happens here is Mirakani gets repeated takedowns over the first two rounds, and then maybe he runs out of steam in the third, but I just don't see Allen getting the finish in the third round to make up for it. So I'm going to side with Makwan Amirkhani. I think that he wins a decision. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Brad One Punch Pickett, who is 26-13, having the last fight of his professional career against Marlon Vera, who is 8-3-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Pickett -210 to come back on Vera at +160. Right now, looking over five dimes, there has been some action on Vera coming in. It's now -140 for Pickett, +120 on Vera. So needless to say, line dropped from +160 to +120, 40-cent drop. They are taking the dog a little bit. I do get it. I mean, Pickett's definitely obviously on his way out. He's retiring after this fight, but he's made it public. He hasn't at times looked the best in his career lately. I mean, he's been facing some really good competition though. So, I mean, it is what it is with him. His chin obviously isn't what it used to be. He is susceptible to getting caught in submissions at times as well. So if he's in there with a great finisher, yes, he can get finished. But overall, Pickett's a tough dude. And again, you guys listen to me time and time again to say how much respect I have for the guy, because he was one of these guys that honestly, before he moved to the States and started training with American Top Team, he wasn't that good. I mean, he made himself. The work he put in and the training partners that surrounded him and everything that he did for himself in his career and the people that he surrounded himself with and the work that he put in, that's what made him good. And that's what made him elite to the point where he was competing with some of the best. I mean, I know it's not the right division, but man, he's got to win over Mighty Mouse, Demetrius Johnson. How quality is that? So Pickett's going to retire, and win or lose this fight, he's had a heck of a career, and I have a ton of respect for him. But I do think he's going to win this fight. I think if he doesn't get finished by Vera, he's the better wrestler of the two. I think he has the better pure boxing out of the two as well. And I just think, obviously, he's got the fight IQ to perform well. So this is his last fight. He's going to want to go out with a win here. He is more prepared. Vera's taking this fight on short notice. Vera has faded in the past as well and not looked the greatest as fights go. So, I mean, his cardio has looked better though recently, and Vera is just improving. I mean, another one of these young guns that happens to get better fight by fight, that's putting in the work, and you can see the improvements. So that's where it's going to be dangerous for Pickett, because Vera is a little unorthodox on the feet, and he could pull off a crazy kick or something along the way and knock Pickett out, or maybe even catch him in a submission along the way too. But I doubt either one happens, honestly. I think that Pickett, his chin is good enough to survive Vera on the feet, and I think he probably survives Vera's sub attempts on the ground as well. And I think he does control enough of the fight, and he probably wins this fight. So I think Pickett does come away with a win for his retirement fight, and I think all the early action, I can understand taking a stab at the dog against the fading veteran, aging veteran, I should say. But that being said, I think you guys are wrong. I think Pickett finds a way to win this fight. He wins it on the cards, or maybe even gets a finish along the way. But I think it's his fight to win or lose, and hopefully for his sake, he retires with a win.
I've been a huge fan of Brad Pickett throughout his entire MMA career, but especially since he signed up in the WEC back in the day and even picked up a Peruvian necktie victory. One of my favorite finishes in all of MMA. So, I mean, Brad Pickett has always been extremely talented. His problem is that he was in so many crazy barn burners, and he took so much damage over the course of his career that it started to catch up to him. I mean, he was a guy that had a pretty good chin, and then it just started getting cracked over and over again. And yeah, he was able to recover quickly, but eventually it just stopped working for him, and then he started getting finished a little bit. So Pickett is still a really exciting fighter. I mean, this guy can still do things that are pretty amazing. I mean, he went out there against Thomas Almeida, and he had Almeida on the ropes with his boxing. I mean, his boxing is still very, very good. It's just his chin isn't. So he can't take a lot of damage. He can't afford to get hit very often, and he tends to like to get in those types of fights where he's brawling and being aggressive and leaving himself exposed at times to have an opportunity to connect. So he's going to have to be a little more cautious this time around if he wants to end his career on a high note. Marlon Vera is a pretty well-rounded young fighter. I mean, the guy, he was a little raw coming out of the Ultimate Fighter, but he still had a great ground game off of his back, and he's definitely added some dangerous ability on the feet. His kicking game is pretty solid. His jab is getting better, and he's starting to round out his overall arsenal. So he's definitely a guy that could do some damage if he continues to progress. That being said, I think Pickett is still getting him at the right spot in Vera's career. Pickett has so much more experience, and he's capable of much more than Vera at this point. Vera could still hurt him on the feet, and that could set something up, but I think, if anything, Pickett should have the advantage in the stand-up. And on the ground, while Vera is dangerous off of his back, Pickett should have the wrestling edge as well. And Pickett has gone to his wrestling a little bit more as he's advanced in his career, because that is something that he can kind of fall back on as an emergency, whether he gets hurt and needs to dive for a takedown, or maybe he just knows that the stand-up's not a big strength, and then that could be the area that he has an advantage. So I expect Brad Pickett to utilize his wrestling significantly in this fight, and as long as he doesn't get caught by something off of Vera's back, there's a good chance that he can end his career on a high note, kind of similar to what we've seen out of guys like Mark Munoz and Chris Lytle, who really brought it in the final performance of their careers in their pretty close to their hometowns. So I think Brad Pickett is able to muster up enough to not just win, but win impressively in his final career fight. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Gunnar Nelson, who is 15-2-1, taking on Alan Joban, who is 15-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds makers' perspective on this one?
I open Nelson minus 300, the comeback on Joban at plus 220. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is currently Nelson minus 350. Joban is at plus 290. Early on, it was Joban action coming in, dropped the line to, I think, about 2.5 to 1 or so. Now it's climbed back up. There's more Nelson action coming in, more parlay action coming in his way as well. Tough fight. I know that both guys tend to get respect from the bettors out there, from the MMA diehards. I mean, we both love watching these guys fight. Joban's just a warrior out there. And it's funny because stylistically, it couldn't be different fighters, meaning Joban likes to stand and bang, and Nelson obviously excels on the ground. But both can do a little bit of the other's specialty as well. You just don't want to really mix too much in that world. Like, for example, Jovan does not want to tangle too much underground with him, because obviously Nelson is far better. And I don't think Nelson wants to play this fight on the feet for three rounds either, because Jovan will obviously have some success along the way on the feet. Although Nelson does have a lot of power, he does have a lot of accuracy on the feet, and he does have that kind of karate style that's a little bit unorthodox, and he can have some success on the feet. I think Nelson would fare better on the feet against Jovan than Jovan would on the ground with Nelson, if that makes any sense. But styles make fights, and I just think this is a nightmare matchup for Jovan. I mean, I do respect that the guy has decent takedown defense overall, and he has good sub defense. He's never been subbed in his career either. So those are two things that are going to make this fight kind of tricky for Nelson. But ultimately, if you look at Nelson, I mean, in most cases, he's able to get the fight to the ground. And when he does, it's a wrap. I mean, he's able to control you, to pound you out a little bit, to get the submission, usually where he wants. So Nelson is just that good on the ground. And even though Jovan hasn't been subbed officially in his career, I think there's a first time for everything, and this is probably going to be that time. I don't think Jovan keeps this fight upright against Nelson, and I think Nelson does implement his ground game, and that's what gets him the win. Could be round one, could be round two, but either way, I think Nelson does do that. And again, you can't count out the fact that Nelson does have a little bit of power, and Jovan has been rocked in the past, and he's been knocked out a couple times as well. So not saying Nelson's going to knock him out, but I think that that's is a possibility that you can't really count out either. So Nelson has more ways to win this fight, even though Jovan is a warrior. And again, you got to respect it. And if I think if this fight plays out longer, like if Jovan's able to survive on the ground against Nelson in round one, he's able to survive a little bit in round two, it could start getting interesting, because Jovan could definitely have some success along the way on the feet and maybe make this fight, you know, steal round the late round two or something like that, and maybe steal round three on the cards if it stays upright. So it could get interesting. I just don't think it's going to play out that way, honestly. We'll see how it goes when they get in there. But to me, it's pretty clear cut. I think Nelson is just a bad stylistic matchup for Jovan, and I think he's going to show it here. So I think Nelson wins, and he probably wins by submission like he can and is capable of doing so.
Alan Jovan had a tremendous performance in his last fight against Mike Perry, where Perry was just kind of swinging from the hip, trying to knock his head off, and Jovan was able to land some nice counter punches. He fought long. He landed jabs. He landed some straight shots. He hurt Perry repeatedly, and he was able to get the kicking game going. I mean, it was a very, very solid performance that helped him pick up a relatively easy win in a fight that a lot of people thought might have expected to go the other way. Now, this time around, though, I think Gunnar Nelson is a very, very dangerous opponent for Jovan. Not only is Nelson capable of holding his own on the feet, but Nelson's ground game is extremely good. Now, Jovan will have a little bit of size advantage in this fight. Jovan has like a 1-inch reach, 1-inch in height or so, but for the most part, Nelson should be able to close that distance. And it's all about Nelson closing the distance in this fight, because if Nelson can get inside and crack Jovan, Jovan's chin is not nearly as good as Nelson's. So if he can crack Jovan, then that could set up a finish on the ground. Or if Nelson can just get this fight to the floor, even though Jovan's defensive wrestling is pretty good. He's had some decent takedown defense throughout his career. But Gunnar Nelson is just on another level on the ground. I mean, honestly, the only guy that's ever been able to go toe-to-toe with him on the canvas has been Damian Maia. And Alan Jovan is no Damian Maia. So what I expect to happen here is Jovan will try to keep his distance and fight long and land jabs and kicks. But if Nelson can land one good shot on the feet, it could set up a submission. Or if Nelson can just get a takedown, it could set up a submission. So I really like Gunnar Nelson here. I think that his improvements on the feet make this a much bigger threat than Jovan's last fight against Perry, where he was only worried about the stand-up. So Gunnar Nelson can hurt him both places, and he probably will hurt him in both areas. So I like Gunnar Nelson. I think that his well-roundedness will pay off in this fight. So I expect Nelson to win by submission. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a light heavyweight contest between Jimmy Manua, who is 16-2, and Corey Anderson, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened this fight exactly a pick of minus 120 Manoa, minus 120 Anderson, and right now it's Manoa minus 145. The comeback in Anderson is at plus 125. So needless to say, early action favors Manoa in this fight. I'm not sure. I mean, this is a tough one for me. I open it a pick 'em, and I think that's actually a fair spot to open it at. I mean, they just stylistically, it's a weird fight because Manoa obviously wants to keep this fight upright and do some damage on the feet. I mean, he is a powerhouse on the feet, to say the least. I mean, the guy has had some devastating knockouts on his resume, as whereas Anderson on the other side of it, I mean, he's more of your grinder. He's more of the guy that's going to take the fight to the ground, kind of pound you out on the ground, implements a pretty smart game plan overall and has success doing so. It's just, will Manoa's takedown defense hold up against Anderson's wrestling? Because if it stays up on the feet, even though Anderson's wrestling, or his, I should say, striking offensively isn't bad, he doesn't want to play on the feet with Manoa for a long time because he probably will get knocked out. I mean, Anderson's chin has been checked in the past. It's definitely been vulnerable. I mean, he's been rocked, he's been dropped, he's been knocked out before. So Manoa has been knocked out a couple times in his career as well. So his chin is definitely a little bit of a concern. But I mean, as far as matchups go, if this fight stays standing, I have a lot more confidence that Manoa probably stays upright longer than Anderson, put it that way. So, but it's not just a striking matchup. I mean, that's what the beauty of this sport is. The fight's going to take place in several aspects and in several areas. And I think that Anderson has the edge on the ground. I think he's going to implement that takedown game plan. And I think even though Manoa's takedown defense overall is good, I think Anderson's still going to have some success along the way. And if he just gets a takedown per round, if he doesn't get finished early on in round one, he's going to have success doing so. I think it might be enough to steal him some rounds. It'll be competitive, but it could definitely do the job and steal him some rounds. So I'll go against the public, especially because this fight is kind of more of a head-scratcher for me. And at plus 125, I do think now it's a dog or pass situation. And I think people are underestimating Anderson just a little bit. In this spot, especially, I know it's in Manoa's backyard or whatnot as well, and he has looked good recently. So with all that being said, though, I think this is a perfect spot for Anderson to come in and pick up a quality win and kind of get back on track a little bit. So against the grain here, go with Anderson, but honestly, it's not a huge confidence type of pick. I mean, it's definitely one that I could see Manoa landing something huge and knocking Anderson out along the way, but still, plus 125, it's a dog or pass situation, no doubt.
This is a really good fight, and it could go either way, honestly. Jimmy Manoa is coming off of the best performance of his entire career against Ovince St. Preux, where not only did he win, but he knocked St. Preux's lights out. And this was St. Preux's first fight after going all five rounds with former champ John Jones. So you have to give Manoa a ton of props here because, I mean, he did something that one of the best fighters on the planet couldn't do. Now, Corey Anderson is a different fighter than Ovince St. Preux. He is a lot more focused on the wrestling than he is the stand-up. I mean, his stand-up's coming along, but it's nowhere near as good as Manoa's. Manoa is a guy that if he is able to settle in with his stand-up, he is going to hurt you. I mean, he has massive power in both hands. He has some brutal knees and elbows. I mean, this guy can tear you up if given the opportunity. Now, Corey Anderson, on the other hand, he's the type of guy that while his stand-up is getting better, he wants to drag you to the floor and then pummel you into submission on the ground. When he's been at his best in his career, it's been because of his wrestling. I think the highlight of Anderson's career was actually his performance against Jan Błachowicz, where he just took Błachowicz down every opportunity and then just destroyed him on the canvas. Anderson is also capable of laying eggs a little bit. If he sits back a little bit too much and focuses on maybe his stand-up, I mean, you get those fights where he can get knocked out or he can lose. That happened against John Volante in primarily a stand-up fight that he was actually doing okay in, but you know, you just leave an opening and then boom, you can get caught. And that will definitely happen if he chooses to stand and bang with Manoa. And that also happened when he lost the split decision to Shogun. I mean, he was getting some takedowns, but he just left an opening for Shogun and Shogun capitalized and was able to convince the judges to go the other way. But when Anderson goes to his bread and butter, you saw it when he smashed Fabio Maldonado, when he crushed Jan Błachowicz, and then most recently, I mean, he just put a beating on Sean O'Connell. Now, none of those guys are as good as Jimmy Manoa. Manoa's two career losses are to the elite of the elite in the light heavyweight division, to Alexander Gustafsson and Anthony Johnson. So we're going to learn a lot about what Corey Anderson's capable of, because it has taken two of the best fighters in the world at light heavyweight to beat Jimmy Manoa. And is Anderson one of those best guys? What it's all going to come down to is the takedowns, because Manoa, he showcased that his takedown defense is improving against Ovin St. Preux, but Ovin St. Preux doesn't quite have the same level of wrestling as Corey Anderson. And Ovin St. Preux still was able to get a takedown in the first round on Manoa and was on top of him for about the final 2 minutes of the first round. So even with St. Preux not having very good wrestling and not having very good setups, he was still able to get him down. So if Anderson's able to do it, that could really open up a lot of doors for him in this fight, both with ground and pound, with a potential to get a knockout, maybe even open up a submission opportunity. Manoa does not have the best durability. I mean, in both of his losses, he did get finished. He got smoked by Anthony Johnson, and then he did get beat up pretty bad on the ground by Gustafsson. So that the path to victory is there for Corey Anderson if he's able to utilize that wrestling. So that being said, Manoa can catch him coming in, and he's a guy that's very patient and looks for those small openings and can capitalize. But that being said, I'm going to side with Corey Anderson. I think that the wrestling will be enough. And while I don't know if he has the conditioning to wrestle Manoa for 5 rounds, I think he might even be able to get a finish in the second or third round if he's able to stay in top position for that whole time. So I'm going to side with Corey Anderson. I think that the top control in wrestling will be the factor. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 107. The premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this week.